This is the EMG Podcast Spotlight Interview with your host, Mike Saulpaul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the EMG Podcast, specifically a Spotlight Interview. And this week, I am so excited to announce that Elegant Music Group has officially partnered with The Wedding Plan & Company. They are an incredible wedding planning company, if their name didn't give that away, that works with clients to really build and pull together amazing celebrations and amazing experiences. And in this Spotlight Interview, I sit down with company founder and owner, Jacqueline Mavroukas, who has such great insight into this world and into this space. And her and I have very, very similar experiences in our upbringing and background, working as quite literally kids in the industry and coming up in it. All of our Elegant Music Group brides are so incredibly fortunate to have this team at their disposal. And because of our partnership, the Wedding Plan & Company planners will be offering some special services specifically to EMG brides. But we'll talk a little bit more about that later. For now, sit back, relax, and enjoy my one-on-one interview with Jacqueline. All right, welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Spotlight Interview here on the EMG Podcast. My guest today is Miss Jacqueline Mavroukas from The Wedding Plan & Company. Jacqueline, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
We were talking a little bit before we hit record here. Who's going to go more off the rails, you or me in the interview? You'll have to stay tuned to find out.
I'm going to put my money on me.
Okay, but we'll see. So Jacqueline comes to us today because we have a very exciting partnership to announce.
Yes, absolutely.
Our company and your company have partnered together. This was like when you think like a villain and a superhero join forces. Not that either one of us is the villain,
sure.
But it was very unlikely to us that we would ever partner officially with a wedding planning company,
yes.
Which is what I have shared with you in the past, but it's a natural fit, and I'm excited to explore all of that. But before we get there, Let me ask you a question that I always ask everyone, which is, who is Jacqueline in a soundbite?
I am passionate. I am determined. I am hopefully a leader to the people in my company, and all of those things that I like to think that I am really shine through in the company, from the team to how we treat our clients. We plan every wedding literally like it's our own. We treat our clients like family. When I say dedicated, I mean, so as a business owner, I don't know if you've ever heard other business owners complain, there's no good workers out there, nobody will, you know, treat your business the way you treat your business. And I just don't know that world, mm-hmm. because my team treats my business like it's their own. And they spend time away from their families and their friends on the weekends and evenings to accommodate client schedules. So who I am, passionate, dedicated, really focused on the client service of our business, really flows from me to the team, to the client. And that's how I would wrap that up.
So for those keeping score, she went off the rails first because I said soundbite. No, I think that that's really good. And I want to get into your background. So
yeah.
you and I have very similar, you don't know a whole lot about my mm-hmm. upbringing. I know a little bit more about yours. We have a very similar experience in sort of how we grew up in the business. So what was your foray for the beautiful people listening into the events world?
Yes. So for the people who are listening to this, if anybody comes from a first generation immigrant family, they probably had a similar experience that I had, which is you are working in the family business before it is actually legal to work,
yeah,
right?
Correct, yeah.
So, you know, free child labor. So my grandfather, I tell this story and oftentimes, it doesn't matter how often I tell this story, I oftentimes get choked up. He was in my opinion, the epitome of the American dream, or what the American dream used to be. Mm-hmm. He witnessed war in our country of Greece, which is where my grandfather, grandmother, and father and aunts and uncles were born. He fled Greece to come to America, left his wife, my grandmother, and his children in Greece for 2 years. He came to America. He worked as a janitor, as a dishwasher at diners. He partnered with five of his other Greek friends to purchase their first business together, saved up every penny he had to send his family over to America. And he then took the jump of purchasing his very first business, which is actually still in our family. And it was a restaurant, which then hosted weddings. So I was...
Is it local?
It is in New Jersey.
Where? And
in
what is it?
Colts Neck.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
Was it Greek?
Not a Greek restaurant. Okay. Everybody always jokes, of course, being in New Jersey, they're like, oh, it was a diner.
Right.
And we do have diners in our family. And, you know, the cliche.
That's like a rite of passage.
The cliche lives on. But my grandfather actually, it was a steakhouse. Mm. And actually, when I was a child, people would take limousines from the city and wear fur coats and diamonds and suits and ties.
Sure.
And I loved the nightlife of it. I was 10 years old watching adults drink martinis at the bar and women in high heels and men in suits. And it
you
was
almost become
this
infatuated
romanticized,
with it, right?
Yeah. It was almost like a movie in real life.
Right.
And it was really great. So, at 10 years old, I became the coat check girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal in the family was, so there were 17 first cousins on that particular side of the family. And the deal was whoever gave up a weekend night of checking coats on Friday, Saturday, Sunday for weddings or dinner or whatever, that whoever takes it over gets to keep it until they give it up. Meaning, you know, we're kids. So whoever wants to go to a birthday party or a sleepover or something like that, well,
now
then
now
you're off the rotation. So I just never went off rotation.
This is the most European thing that I also grew up in.
But wait, I have to like share with this.
Yeah,
and
it's
not even like, I actually get sad for my fellow coat check gals or guys in like New York City, because if you think about it, we had 500 people, we had about 1,000 people that come through the door every weekend, and everyone gave me a dollar.
Yeah.
I was 10, 11
Thank
years old
you.
Making like $1,000 a weekend in cash in singles.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, to this day, I joke, I'm like, it was still the most fun job I ever had.
Yeah.
I hung coats, I read magazines and books, and I mingled with people, and I'd lock the closet door, and I'd actually, so this is probably a part that I don't get into enough or just have it on my blurb on our website. But what I would actually do is once all the coats were hung, I knew, okay, well, the wedding's going to be 5 hours from now,
you're
right?
You're free for a bit.
Totally.
Right.
So I'd lock the closet door and then I would actually go back into the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started chasing couples around. Can I hold your champagne? Let me grab your veil. Let me fix your tie. The photographer, and I'm dating myself. This was when digital photography was literally not invented. So it was all film. And if there was an orange parking cone, you know, outside and it would happen to be in the photo, like that was in your wedding photo forever. So I would lock that coat room door and I would just run around running weddings.
Right.
And was in that until I went off to college. After college, I was in corporate event planning for quite a long time.
So wait, let me stop you there. So did you, when you went to, it sounds like you went to college for event. What was your major?
I actually didn't go for event planning. I actually do joke and say there's no wedding planning college.
Yeah.
But I was a communications major.
But did you know that you wanted to end up in events because of your upbringing?
I wanted to get an education where I could explore different opportunities. So for instance, in communication, at one point I was maybe interested in like journalism or something like that. But I definitely always had the events bug in me that never really went away. And I love events.
Yeah.
I love all kinds of events. I love corporate events. I love social events. Of course, our business is mainly focused on weddings. So when I went to college, I definitely was open to exploring other opportunities. Embarrassingly enough, I was like the kid in college who also changed my major 5 times.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, for a semester I was like, you know,
this and then that.
Yeah, I was a criminal justice or whatever for like a semester. I was nursing for a semester that, you know, I can't even look,
you
know,
yeah.
at anything. So that wasn't going to really fly. So I was definitely open to other things, but ultimately my passion drew me back to events.
What's the one thing from your childhood, and I'm sure there's many, but I'm going to ask you for the one thing from your experience being the coat check girl or working at that venue that you think is the single most important lesson that informs how you plan today?
Okay. So I have two answers to that. And one is like super logistical and one is super personal. I would say, so I was probably, so customer service is just at the, I mean, I know it sounds cliche and you would imagine that every business prioritizes would, that.
Yeah. And not the case.
To be honest with you, I actually am shocked at the feedback we get from clients about how other people do run their business in such a way where it's more business-centric than client-centric, yeah. And it blows my mind. But anyway, I was probably 12 years old when the person who was not part of our family was who was the manager of the restaurant. It was a really busy Friday night. We had there's a big giant square bar in the center of the restaurant, and then the wedding venue was in the back of the restaurant, and there were, oh my gosh, just three rows deep of people waiting for the bars. A crazy busy night. We had a live band playing, and the manager at the hostess stand had a bar stool, and there was a woman at the bar and she needed a place to sit. So I went and grabbed the bar stool and I brought it up to her without her asking. And I just said, ma'am, please use this bar stool. I don't know. I can't remember exactly, broken leg, broken ankle, something happened, whatever. So I wanted her to have the bar stool. Well, the manager came up to me and said, that's not her bar stool. That belongs at the hostess stand. And I thought to myself, is this guy crazy? Mm. We have a customer who's eating and drinking at our establishment, and you want to fight with her over you sitting down? You should be working.
Right,
you
right.
shouldn't be sitting at a bar stool. And the whoever was the hostess was the night is running circles around this place anyway. Like, she doesn't have time
doesn't
to sit.
Right.
But the fact that anyone would put themselves over a client in any capacity just really blows my mind. So that is kind of like a really weird childhood memory of working in the business where I was just like, you literally never put yourself first.
Right, right.
So that's why we offer evening consultation times. Our clients work during the day. We offer consultations on Saturdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. When everybody is not working, we're working. We know that when do you have off to do things? On the weekends and in the evenings. So if we're closed those times, we're literally cutting our customer service in half.
Right,
I mean, that's
right.
it's not convenient for people to get on the phone
yeah.
at 1 p.m. on a Monday. They're at work.
Right.
So that's probably one of the things that stood out most, and like, you just never put yourself first, and it's always the customer, it's always the client, in terms of how you build and structure your business.
Yeah. So you leave college, you're in corporate events, and then what was the jump into your company, and was it right to your company?
Yeah, I love this question. Okay, so I was sitting in corporate America. I was sitting in a cubicle, and I just have a very big personality, and I'm very talkative, and I am very friendly, and I love getting to know people, and I want to learn about you. I want you to learn about me. And there were a few times in corporate America where I feel like my spirit personally was just getting crushed. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll never forget a time I was standing waiting for an elevator to go up to a meeting. And the woman who sat three cubicles away from me said to me, oh, what'd you do this? Or how was your weekend? And I said, oh, it was so great. It was like my boyfriend, who's now my husband, but he was my boyfriend at the time. I was like, you know, my boyfriend and I, we tried this great new restaurant in the city. I was working in Manhattan. So I was like, oh, we tried this great new restaurant. And, you know, we just talked like normal, in my opinion, normal human beings until we got on the elevator. We got to the meeting. Then it became professional. Everything was great. So later that day, I got called into my boss's office. And he was like, hey, listen, just so you know, when people in corporate America ask how your weekend was, just say good. And I was like,
that's weird.
What?
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, everyone's working, everyone's busy, everyone's on their way to and from a meeting. And I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, like, this is so not the place for me.
Message received loud and clear.
Yeah. I mean, I for sure was the kid who, like, you know, had to sit in the corner, you know, in elementary school for talking too much. And They shouldn't have ever put my computer and my desk near the printer. So everyone walks up to the printer every 3 seconds. Like I'm that girl. Like you should not I need a sign on my bed. There's this thing on like the internet where it's like they have the girl sitting in front of the computer and the signs in the back, like, don't talk to her. She has no self-control. Like that is
you. Yeah.
For sure me. Yep. Yep. But the fact that he just like squashed my spirit, I just thought, no. And then what really happened was I met my husband, and he is an Ivy League educated engineer who has never worked a single day in his life as an engineer.
Okay.
He decided when he graduated college that he was going to, it's actually funny, there's like five guys from his Ivy League school who literally, one's a photographer, one's a DJ in Vegas, one became like a model. Like none of them actually, they're like these genius.
There's five very sad mothers somewhere.
No, literally. We joke. My husband's significantly older than I am, and we still joke that his mom is like still like upset with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, when I met him, I just kind of thought like, oh my God, there are people who actually just follow their dreams.
What does he do?
He's an actor.
He's an actor, okay.
And he's been acting successfully for 30 years.
Okay.
He moved to Europe. He became a model first, and then he dove into acting. And he was just this really inspirational person that was like, hey, if you're not happy, do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought, I mean, and this is going to sound, I'm not sure how familiar you would be with kind of the female experience as a Greek or European, but we were kind of brought up to believe you go to college not to get an education, have a career, but you go to college to meet the husband. Mm-hmm. And I had that kind of in me for a little while, even though it was so not who I was, like inherently, that's not who I am. But that was kind of what was the message growing up. I had one aunt who was an entrepreneur, and I had other aunts who were stay-at-home mothers, both of which, by the way, fully sign off on either option. I want women to have whatever option they want and what's right for them and their family. However, one of the biggest catalysts of me starting my business was actually watching a few women in my family being stuck in toxic relationships due to financial restraints. And I thought to myself, as I was witnessing that as a child, as a teenager, and as I started in corporate America, you know, you're starting to go from that young teenage, young adult into an actual adult. And I thought to myself, I can never and will never be in a situation where if I want to leave, I can't financially. I want to be able to pick up my bag and pull out of the driveway at any given moment without thinking twice if I'm ever in a toxic relationship.
You want it to be self-dependent.
Completely.
Right, right.
And I also wanted to, and maybe I don't want to jump ahead a question, but I'll give a brief answer to the next part. And then if you want me to elaborate, I'm happy to.
This has been, by the way, we're off the rails again for those
again,
watching at home. This
again
has been the easiest interview I've done because I just get to sit and listen.
Yeah, perfect.
So please go on.
The reason why I didn't stay a one-woman wedding planning business and wanted to scale is because my goal was once I became financially independent and realized that I can make whatever decision I want, my goal is to employ as many females as humanly possible.
I want to ask you a question about this, and I don't mean to cut you off.
Please.
So about a year ago, Anya Photo is our boudoir photography partner, and her whole core business mission is to empower women. And at the time, and maybe it wasn't quite a year ago, but at the time, my wife and I were pregnant with the coming birth of our daughter, right? And I grew up in a household of boys, and I never, but very strong women, very strong European women in my family,
sure,
right? I never was raised, like when the Me Too movement came out,
sure,
I was shocked. I was like, people can act like this? Like, I would have got my ass kicked
right
as a kid, right?
Right, right.
So
right,
like, I was shocked that this was going
a
on.
Thing.
But the point is that in my upbringing, I never looked at gender as like a defining thing. Like, I thought my mom was a stay at home. My dad went to work. I thought my mom worked way harder than my dad.
Sure.
Right? Like, my mom was the boss, you know? So like, I grew up in that and I never really stopped to pay that any mind or any attention. So as an employer, I don't view my relationship with my female employees any different than I do my males. Anyway, Anya was sitting here and I was trying to pick her brain to tap into that, because there is something inherent, especially in female business owners. Part of your experience is something that I did not go through.
Right.
There's almost like there's a inherent, not anger, but there is a motivation inside of you that is more gender-based than my experience.
Sure.
And now having a daughter, right, and like thinking about how am I going to raise her and what things am I going to tell her to value and whatever, I always am curious. I don't know if I have a pointed question here other than to like, I'm very interested in that. And why is it so, like, you and I are very similar, yeah, more than you probably know in our upbringings. We both grew up in the business. We both come from that sort of strong European thing. I worked in a career that I didn't like and kind of found my way back to what I feel like I was supposed to be doing. What if I was an amazing planner?
As a male?
Yeah.
I'd hire you.
Have an all-female team.
We have an all-female team. That is absolutely not to say that we would not hire a male or
okay, I didn't know if
benefit.
It was like you're only hiring
no,
females.
No, absolutely
okay.
not. That would, no. So we are not a female-only company. It just so happens, I think, when I post our openings,
that's who applies,
females
right.
apply. And then I also get to know my team and I get to know their backstories and what's important to them. And also, so gender is just not a requirement. It's just something that I find empowering to provide opportunities for my gender that potentially wouldn't be there otherwise. And I have oftentimes people come to us without any wedding planning experience, which I actually prefer, quite frankly. And I get to train them and I get to, one of the big problems with wedding planning.
Oh, I could give you a whole
probably,
list. Yeah.
Well, let me give you, I will tell you the core problem.
Yeah, go ahead.
The core problem is that as we were joking a little bit ago, that there's no college for wedding planning.
There's no finishing school. There's
truly no starting point.
Right. Yeah.
So how people get their experience is literally trial by fire. It's by jumping in the deep end, messing things up, totally screwing up relationships with vendors, totally screwing up clients, totally screwing up weddings, and then figuring out what the problems were. And then if they're smart enough, they can fix it. But they've already ruined something. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
they've already established
it's the problem that we have in our business is nobody wants their wedding band to be the first wedding that they're playing.
Correct.
But you've got to start somewhere, right?
Well, what I get to do is I've been planning weddings since I'm literally, like, I think the first wedding I actually planned, like, for my family's business, I was probably like 16.
Yeah.
So what I get to do is, from my experience, we get to onboard people, train them for a year, let them be an assistant, let them get 30, 50 weddings under their belts. Let them be part of our team trainings. Let them be on the ground at actual wedding days, getting the actual experience before they ascend and get promoted into wedding planning. What you don't want to do is just someone wakes up one day and says, because what you can do, because there's no like actual certificate, what you don't want is someone who just woke up one day and said, I think I'm a wedding planner, or even worse, the bride who just planned their wedding saying, I think I'd be a really good wedding planner.
My God, there's so many of those.
Might actually be the case, except you as a bride is a very different experience as you as the person managing the bride and the groom or the couple or the families.
But
so it's very different.
This is a good place. I want to go here on a tangent for a second. So the reason why I keep alluding and joking, as you know, there is a wedding planner can be a dirty word amongst wedding vendors, not just in entertainment, but photographer, whatever.
Believe me, I know better than anyone.
Yeah. The reason why I think our companies, it was a natural fit is, and this is something unique about your business, is you guys are really large for what you do, the way that we are really large. And some of that scale benefits clients because we're never putting a rookie DJ or a musician we don't break out a brand new wedding band.
Right.
Maybe we put a new sax player in an experience band,
right.
Let them get it. Not a lot of people can do that in our field or in your field.
Right.
So you have 15 planners, right? And you do over 250 events a year?
We do just over 200.
Okay, just over 200. So I was listen, I was inflating
you. Oh, you were close.
You could have went with
it. I just didn't want to lie. You could have went with it.
Anyway, but so part of the immediate benefit is that you have that breadth of experience and scale, which is something that we know benefits the client and, right. and aids in the service,
right.
which was something appealing for us in partnering with yes. you is that you're not doing, we love the planners that do 6 weddings a year.
Right.
And they make us nuts.
Right.
Right. They just make us crazy because it's almost like this is... they're doing it part-time. They live right. for these 6 events. It's like, and they over-insert themselves, right?
Yes.
And so when you bring on someone, right, other than customer service, from a tangible, tactical sort of, what is your like Bible for here are the top 3 things you do or don't do as a wedding planner, not related to customer service?
Sure. Okay, so the first thing you don't do, okay, so I always say this, if anyone's ever, I know I'm Greek and I'm going to quote my Big Fat Greek Wedding, haha, but it's actually a great line that I think is actually very poignant for, doesn't matter what job you're in or personal relationship or whatever, I think this is applicable, is as a wedding planner, you don't, a lot of wedding planners make the mistake of really trying to assert their power. And really say, I'm the boss and I'm in charge yep. and it's my show. And we could not be further from that mm-hmm. like mindset. So the quote from the movie is the man, and this is just a quote from the movie, not saying I technically believe it,
okay.
but the man is the head of the household, but the woman is the neck. And the woman can move the head however she wants.
Right.
So I joke and say, well, that's the wedding planner. The wedding planner is the neck.
Oh, I like that.
The wedding planner can... We get to guide what people are focusing on. We get to guide the vendor communication. We get to guide things. But we do not get into, I think I see the biggest problems I see wedding planners have is they get into ego battles
yep.
with other vendors about who's in charge. Well, let me tell you who's in charge. The person paying all the bills.
Right, right.
So the client is in charge. So that's number one
right.
To get that straight. And of course, you should only, as a wedding planner, they should only be bringing on couples who will inherently trust them and trust their advice. So yes, you do have some level of power or assertiveness that you can bring to making good and healthy decisions for your couple throughout the process. But so we are not ego-based. Mm-hmm. We don't need you to think anything about us other than how do we execute this wedding from start to finish working as a team, right? So we are super collaborative. And that's also something we don't see in a lot of other companies. I have some great friends who are wedding planners. If I'm saying negative things, this does not apply
to some people. She told me before we started recording, it's about you specifically. Yeah. So don't,
yeah.
you know that.
excuse me. But actually I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent. This answers the question though. So when I very first started my business, I was doing my first round of vendor introduction calls. And I may have shared this story with you mm-hmm. Kind of offline, but I was doing the very first round of vendor introductions. And I was like, hi, my name's Jacqueline. I'm the wedding planner for so-and-so and so-and-so. And literally the verbal audible responses were, oh, Jesus, we hate wedding planners, mm-hmm. from 10 vendors. And so instead of becoming defensive, instead of getting upset, and again, trying to like be ultra aggressive and drive my ego about, I know what I'm talking about, and I've been doing this since I'm 16 or blah, 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 blah. I was like, you know what? Can you do me a favor? Tell me why do you hate working with wedding planners?
Yeah.
Tell me
and
everything.
Then take inventory of
tell
everything
me
that they
everything
said.
That you hate about working with wedding planners. And this is no joke. I have built my entire business, the entire structure of how we communicate with vendors, when we communicate with vendors, the wording of our emails, the timing of our phone calls, the time, how we create timelines for actual execution on wedding day is not only customer-centric to the couple, but we are very, very vendor-centric.
Right.
We basically say, we're not here to tell you how to do your job. I don't know how to play the drums. I don't know how to play guitar. Mm-hmm. I can't carry a note to save my life. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. What I want to do is, and what my team wants to do, is we want to give you what you need in order to be successful time-wise and execution-wise and logistic-wise while simultaneously you not stepping on the toes of the nine other vendors we have here. So how do we coordinate everybody here? Because if you're trying to unload your trucks at the same time, we have 30 centerpieces getting unloaded in the one loading dock. I mean, it's going to be friction. So what we try to do is just marry everybody together, but it really has nothing to do with us.
You're not feeding your ego, right?
We're not.
It's just making sure that the thing is.
We're not. And I think that's something that I really hone in on with training. And it's why vendors, honestly, our biggest referrers are vendors.
We're one of them. Yeah. Right? I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. So your soul is getting crushed. So you leave corporate America.
My soul's getting crushed in corporate America. Right?
Was that jump and two-part question.
Yeah.
Did you know, okay, I'm jumping and I'm starting my own business? Or did you say, I'm jumping and I'm going to figure it out? And was that frightening to you? Was it liberating? Was it all of the above? You know, talk us through that.
So I basically, I knew I wanted to start my own business. I was sitting in the cubicle and I just said to myself, I've got to be working for myself. Like, I also used to get really, I'm inherently not an anxiety-driven person, but I also used to get anxiety of every time my boss emailed me, like, am I getting fired today? Like, is the rug going to be pulled out from under me? And there's another round of layoffs happening because of downsizing. Like, you know, and I was on my own. I was living on my own. I was supporting myself. Once I turned 18, I was financially responsible for myself. So I'm like, if I don't have income, I don't have an apartment. I don't have a car. I don't have insurance. I don't have anything. So when I was 25 working in corporate America, I just had a lot of anxiety and my soul was getting crushed. And I decided, so I actually had someone from the company I was with actually wanted to have lunch with me. And he said, Jacqueline, he was a bit older and it was in our like company cafeteria. And he was like, Jacqueline, like you seem unhappy, quite frankly, and not yourself. Like, you've worked here for 2 years. You used to be so bubbly and happy. And, you know, everyone always, you were just the smiley face around the office. And now you're not. So like, what's up? So I shared with him a little bit of my struggles. And he said, listen to me, whatever you have in your brain right now to do, I want you to do it. I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, you cannot wait. Do not wait. And by the way,
how old were you at this point?
25.
Okay.
So by the way, anyone who's listening, it's never too late to follow your dreams. However,
it starts to get late early.
Well, it starts to get late early. But what he meant by that, like he said to me, he's like, I also had dreams, but then I had children and then I have a wife.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And right. Yeah. And so now if I were to go, if this person were to go out on his own, the quality of living would drastically decline.
Oh, sure, right.
The failure rate is high for new businesses, things like that. So he was like, I have to choose my family first over now my dreams.
Right.
So I want you to put your dream first. So now I have watching at the time, my boyfriend, now husband, I was watching him follow his dream. I have this other person mentoring, telling me to go for it. So I actually started my LLC whilst at work. From my cubicle at another company, I paid for the LLC. And I actually listened. So this is going to, if anyone's listening and you're a Bravo fans, I also was, I'm a huge Bravo fanatic, embarrassingly, but not, happy to admit it actually. But the old school Bethany Frankel on Real Housewives of New York City.
Yep.
She was like broke when she started and she had this really strong entrepreneurial spirit. Obviously, many people know her story, founder of Skinny Margarita, $100 million acquisition, yada, yada. I just heard her speak once at a business summit and her advice, and I was, again, 25 when I heard this, you know, she said, female specifically, we tend to think long-term. So then we get very overwhelmed about all of the steps it's going to take to get to that point. She said, men, on the other hand, typically, again, this is all generalizations, that there are exceptions to every rule, but typically men tend to be very task focused. Mm-hmm. So they say, okay, they accomplish this task, they accomplish that task, then they do this and they do this and they do that. But women, we tend to jump. So she said, if you want to start your own business, why don't you just do one thing a day? One thing. Do not overwhelm yourself. One thing a day, and in 1 year, you will have done 365 things towards starting your own business. Well, once I took all the pressure off of myself of like, going from having nothing to like buying an LLC, well, then the momentum gets going, right? And then you're not doing one thing a day. You're doing 10 things a day or 20 things a day, but only because you want to.
Yep.
So anyway, I bought the LLC. I started. And honestly, within the very first year in New Jersey, back when I started, the wedding season was just very seasonal, right? So I'd have 10 couples reach out to me for like, let's say June 2nd.
Right.
So I was in the first year I was in business, I was turning 9 weddings down for day.
How were you generating business in the beginning?
So
it was just you to start,
it was
right?
just me to start. Right. So I started the business based out of Hoboken, New Jersey, yep. which is also where I met my husband at a bar called McSwiggins, if anyone's watching.
Yeah, we know McSwiggins.
Familiar yep. with yep. it. I started the business out of Hoboken, and actually, I got really involved in the community. There's a wonderful company called Hoboken Girl. Jennifer Chapuka, who's the founder and owner of Hoboken Girl, is actually one of my closest friends, but through business first.
Right.
I reached out to Hoboken Girl. I said, hey, I'd like to promote my business. I'd like you to do an article on me, sharing a little bit of my history, how we're starting. She and I became very close personally, and we are amazing friends many, 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 many years later. But I just became very involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And Hoboken is a wonderful community for the wedding world. Lots of young couples, lots of people in love. They don't necessarily get married in Hoboken, but they like that their planner was in Hoboken. It was very easy for me to meet people in person, meet at coffee shops. Yeah. So I was just very focused on the community. And Hoboken has been the most beautiful town and has supported our business for 13 years, and we could not be more grateful to Jennifer, Hoboken Girl, and also the whole community of Hoboken.
Hoboken is as I always tell our Hoboken clients, because we have so many of them, it's the only place I've never lived that I know the zip code, 07030, because of how many clients we have from there. I mean, it's like an epicenter. So so you just broke in, and then it's wedding. So it's like, hey, I use this plan, and it just kind of spiraled.
And then it spiraled, and then...
When did you know it was time to bring somebody else on?
Oh my gosh, literally right away. Because, again, I mean, if you are running any sort of, I mean, I personally think other people may disagree, totally fine if their ethos is different. If you're running a business who turns away business, that's bizarre to me, right? Like,
I hate it. We just, for those listening,
a business.
We just high five. I can't stand when a business owner goes, I'm perfectly satisfied with this. And I'm like, then I'm going to eat you.
Right.
Right. It's like, but people have asked me like, well, could you like, you know, to the effect of like, do you want to keep growing or can you keep growing? I go, are there other companies in business? Yes.
Right.
And I want right. more.
Right. Totally. Yeah. So I just was like, okay, well, I'm turning people down. So I don't want to turn people down. That to me, that just seems counterintuitive of the whole point of having a business.
Right. Right.
And so I decided to, I literally cold posted, probably on HobokenGirl.com, like the OG blog.
Yep.
And was like looking for wedding planners. And I built a team rather quickly. Within the first year, there were like 4 of us. Mm-hmm. A few of them are still with me 13 years later,
that's
or 12 and a half years out of the 13 years. 12 and a half years later, some of them are still with us. The other two have just gone on to do other things with their lives, not wedding related at all.
Right.
And then from there, we just kept building and growing. And my thing is you have to start training your team so far in advance before they can actually touch clients work-wise, right? So I literally am always hiring. Like if I'm out and there's an amazing server, I'm like, do you want to be a wedding planner one day?
We hire servers all the time.
Literally. Like, or if I'm at a hotel or if I'm at, I don't care, Walmart. Like I literally do not care where I am.
Why do you prefer people that have no background?
Because I get to, they're not kind of
set in their ways
or say like, well, this is how I've always done it. I'm like, well, that's not how we do it. So,
and
listen, if someone came to us and was completely willing to follow our protocol, so be it, and totally fine.
No, it's
and
just
welcome.
Your preference.
It's just a little bit of my preference. They just have this kind of, we just get to instill certain priorities in them from the beginning where it's not, we're not fighting, we're not swimming upstream, if
right,
you will,
right, right.
right? We're not like fighting against a preconceived
sure.
notion. So it makes things a little bit easier for me. When I'm hiring someone, I've hired people who have their own, who've had past experience before, and they're not with us.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Yeah.
Again, it's the ego thing, right? Yep. It's like, well, I guess if...
Yeah.
Go be that somewhere else, but not here.
So you're in business, you're doing all of these weddings, and our paths crossed because I got to know members of your team, not you. I was working a lot, particularly with Christy a lot. Mm-hmm. I've worked with Joy and a bunch of people, but even one of your planners used EMG.
Yeah, Kayla.
Which is funny. Yeah. But Christy and I built a really good relationship over the last year, and that slowly kind of opened the door here. And I think, as I told my partners, she's one of the planners I don't mind working with. I'll spin it positively, glass half full. And then we met, right? Yeah. And so I think both of us were kind of skeptical of like, wait a second. We normally would be a no. What drew you to working with EMG or the prospect of working with EMG?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you and I met, I think you approached the conversation very similarly to the way that I approach conversations is you're like, you looked at me and you're like, so what don't you like about working with bands or musicians? And mm-hmm. I was like, well, I hate it when, you know, bands show up at 4:00 and at 4:10, they're chasing my planner around while they're trying to finish family photos, asking them when their dinner is going to be, right? Like, you know, we have very similar communication styles and don't sugarcoat things, be blunt. We're both business people. We both value the same. We value a lot of the same things, the customer service experience. We want people to feel really taken care of and that we really care. And so I felt that. And, you know, I say this, people, I have vendors ask me personally all the time, like, how do we get like referred by you guys? And I was like, honestly, you have to go through my team. Because if you make their, and the only thing a vendor should be focusing on if trying to become a preferred vendor with someone is making the planner's lives easier.
Right.
Read the timeline. Mm-hmm. We're happy to answer questions, but if it has already been answered on the timeline, you should be reading the timeline. We give it to you with plenty of time ahead of the wedding. So read the timeline, show up prepared. Don't chase us around if you see us in the middle of something else. We promise we will absolutely make sure you are good and you are happy and that you have everything you need. But like, just don't fight us on things. Like, because we all know, right? Because I tell everybody. I tell our couples. I tell vendors. You know, the best thing you can do, our timeline is like 8:01 a.m., 8:02 a.m., 8:03 a.m., right? It's super structured and super rigid. But we build in a lot of what we call buffer time. And the reason why we do that is because we know that there's going to be, we're going to need flexibility within the confines of this timeline. So if something happens, if something's supposed to happen at 8:05, but the next thing doesn't really need to happen until 8:30, well, we know we have 25 minutes of like flexible moments needing to happen, whether it's for the photographer, whether it's for hair and makeup, or whoever the vendor is that needs that flexibility in that time.
Yep.
Like we build that in. So I just want, we need vendors who are flexible with us, who will go with the flow, who will be pleasant, who will not try to overpower us. Like, we are a team.
Yep.
And those are the weddings that see the most success are when people truly, and not just saying like lip service, we're a team. It's like, hey, how can I make you, if you ask me how you can make my life easier and I ask you how I can make your life easier.
Everybody's happy.
And we have 10 people who are doing that.
I agree.
That's what makes it successful.
So what, if I'm an EMG bride and I'm listening to this and I'm like, okay, we get this a lot. Yeah. I've never planned a wedding before. How does someone make the distinction, in your opinion, of like, yes, I need a wedding planner, no, I don't, or yes, I need like full planning, yes, I need, you know, I've always kind of struggled to answer that question myself. There are some people that are just a train wreck and you're like, you immediately need a planner, right? But like, what would you say is a good barometer if a bride is listening to this for the first time and says, do I need a wedding planner? What should they be evaluating themselves to answer that question?
So here's the broad answer, and then I'll kind of dive into it a little bit. Everybody needs a wedding planner. Now, at what capacity is a completely different question, right? So we have couples that come to us and say, I'm the first one in my family to get married. We have no reference of who's a great florist, who's a great photographer, who's great entertainment, you know, band, DJ, whatever it is. We don't have a reference for any of this, or they're the first of their friend group to get married.
Right.
So, they might need a little bit more handholding and more of that full service, right? Or the other people that come to us for full service are people who are like, hey, we have extremely demanding jobs. And, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm in med school, I'm, you know, an accountant, it's accounting season, I'm whatever it is, they have incredibly demanding jobs and they don't have time. You know, to book one vendor, it's upwards of like 50 emails, right?
Yeah, right.
And again, we, as our company, like we work outside of normal office hours. Most vendors don't.
Right, right.
They're working on the weekends when you're available as the client, right? So then we, of course, have partial planning because maybe you do, like maybe you're down the street, you've been using this florist since you're, you know, 5 years old and you really want that florist to be part of your wedding. Fantastic. Like you don't need us to curate that particular vendor, or maybe you have already found your wedding gown, so you don't need our service for that. Or you've already found your venue because you've been obsessed with this venue even since before you got engaged. So we're able to really curate. Now, the biggest thing I say is I don't care if you work with us for full service, partial, but having someone the month of and the day of is should be a non-negotiable, quite frankly.
Do you find it hard though to kind of parachute in for a day of?
So we don't do day of without month of.
Okay, got it.
Yep. So
okay.
So for everyone who's listening, there is zero, no such thing. There is no such thing
right.
as day of coordination only. There's no such thing.
Right, because how would you know?
It doesn't exist.
Right.
And by the way, if someone claims to you that it does, run the other way. Do not give them a penny
Good tip.
Of your money. Because what will happen is they will literally just annoy you, the bride or groom or couple, all day long.
Yep.
Because they won't know what the hell they're talking about. So, or what they're doing. They will have no reference. They will have no relationship with the vendor. So the vendors won't respect them. They will have absolutely zero authority over anything. Yep. They'll be confused. What comes next? What are your priorities? Like what's important to you? What are your family dynamics? I can't even tell you how often it comes into play where people's, you know, family dynamics, we're just managing family dynamics. Forget the logistics and the vendors and the timing and the ceremony and the chairs and the rentals and the decor. Like, forget that. Sometimes it's literally just like mom can't be near dad, or like dad's, you know, whatever, and Aunt Susie are in a fight, or like whatever it is, right? So, but how could somebody ever know that? And if you are spending a dime on that, it will be the worst money you spend.
Sure.
So do not hire someone who claims they can magically show up on your wedding day. And I use this analogy a lot. It's kind of like, you know, let's say you've been in your career for 10 years, but you left the company that you've been working at for 10 years on Friday, but you started a new company on Monday. How effective are you on Monday?
Right.
I mean, you know how to do your overall job in general, but you don't know the ins and the outs of the company. You don't know the people who work there. You don't know the culture. You don't know anything about that company. Mm-hmm. On Monday, your first day of work, I don't care how long your career has been, you're basically useless.
Right, right.
You're doing paperwork, right? And watching some training videos. Like, that's pretty much it. So that's one of the things that one analogy I use, and another analogy I use, it's kind of like, can you plan your own wedding? You can. Sure. Kind of like, I can cook my own food, but it doesn't taste as good as when I go to a 5-star restaurant.
Right.
I can cut my own hair, but it doesn't look as good unless I go to an actual salon with someone who's a hairstylist. You know, I can do a lot of things. I can build furniture. It's not going to be the same as if I got it from Restoration Hardware, or for example, like, so I can do a lot of things that I'm not a professional at.
Sure.
But if I let professionals do their job, it's going to turn out a lot better. And also, you don't know the problem. Okay, so think about life in general. If you make a mistake in life, oftentimes you get a redo. If you make a mistake for your wedding, there is no redo,
right?
So it's one of the very few circumstances in your life, and up until that point in your life, it's probably your largest investment. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mean to tell me you're going to make the largest investment you've ever made in your life into anything.
Where there are no redos. With no experience.
And you're going to skimp out on hiring a wedding planner who, by the way, is the nucleus for all of the other things that you have going on.
Sure.
Family, friends, guests, vendors, rentals, setup, breakdown, transportation, just whatever you need. You're going to get rid of the people who are going to organize everything? Like, that seems like a weird place to kind of skip.
Right.
And the other part of it is like, there's a big difference between, being like, I don't know, just, you don't want to throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. We've never had a couple regret hiring us. We have had couples regret not hiring us.
Yeah,
I've gotten literal emails from couples like on their honeymoon who go, Jacqueline, on that consult call, you said this, that, and the other thing, and I can't get it out of my brain now because we're 5 days out from our wedding, and what you said was true, that my mom didn't get to enjoy any of the wedding day because she was the one managing all of the vendors, or I actually didn't get to talk to my family or friends because I was managing people, or something went wrong, and we had to handle it ourselves.
I'm going to ask you this question. We're coming up on time, but sure. I want to ask this question. I learned, right? So we live in a very strong venue part of the mm-hmm. country, meaning like the venues of New Jersey, New York, they offer very strong like maitre d' services and whatever. And they kind of act as like the day without a planner, right? What I learned from our colleagues in other parts of the country that planners have really a larger role outside of the tri-state area.
100%.
You plan in Europe, you kind of go like us, where your clients take us, and you also, what's the connection to LA? Because I know you do some bi-coastal stuff.
So we actually have we have a team of 15 planners. Some of them are located actually in LA.
Okay. Is the experience different for you?
From planning.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in California, wedding planners are treated like royalty.
Right.
And actually, most venues and vendors absolutely require, like, they will not, you cannot book a wedding at their because you need a planner. You can't book a photographer without a planner. You can't book. So having a planner in California, like, is a completely different animal than it is here. In New Jersey / New York, we're still fighting very much old stereotypes of wedding planners. Again, being aggressive, being useless, not being organized, not really knowing how to approach people correctly or how to communicate ahead of time correctly or when to communicate or what details to be confirming or not be confirming or blah, blah, blah. So in New York and New Jersey, even though, yes, venues have very strong teams, let's say maitre d's or bridal attendants, they don't do what we do.
No. So I didn't mean to cut your knees out there. What I meant is, and this is a reason why I dislike working with other planners, is the ones that do parachute in on the day of at a venue where we are the house account and we've worked 60 weddings this year, and I walk in and I hug the maitre d' and he hugs me, and now there's a planner. Obviously, I'm looking at it through the narrow scope of day of.
Right.
Whereas obviously your value proposition, I would say, is the insurance policy to make sure everything is smooth in the lead up
and going on day of. Here's the great part. If it's your house account, if you just have one conversation with our planner to confirm the things that are on the contract, we'll leave you the hell alone. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, I know.
We don't need to, we're not breathing down your neck.
Yeah, but most planners aren't flexible, right? So that word that you use, the flexibility. You know how many times I get a minute-by-minute timeline that I laugh because I know it's never going to go minute-by-minute, but everyone seems to know that except for the planner.
Right.
And now it's like 8:06 and they're on me and I'm like, well, the kitchen hasn't run, you know.
No, so, we build in time. Right. So I always say, like, if you're late on a wedding day with us, you're perfectly on time because we build in all of that kind of time. But that's the thing. I think a lot of vendors fight us on, like, just let us confirm the 5 things that are on the contract.
Yep.
Once you do that, we are not micromanaging you. We're not your moms. We don't need to, like, you will either succeed or you will fail. But either way, we've done our job confirming the details and making sure that you are organized in conjunction with other vendors and everyone's reading from the same book, right? Like we're not just and on the same chapter and on the same page. That's all we want. So that's why, what's great is, so number one, we talk about how people don't love working with wedding planners, but that's actually how I've built my business is they come to us and say, oh, we hate working with wedding planners. And then we say, okay, no problem. Then they experience it with us. And then I can't tell you how many emails, phone calls, DMs I get from first-time photographers or that we've worked with, for the first time, or venues. And they're like, hey, can we put you on our preferred vendor list? Because you guys were amazing.
Yeah, the antithesis of what we thought you were going to be.
Sure. Yeah. And so the funny thing is a lot of times preferred vendor lists on venues or other vendors, you have to pay to play. So you pay to be on their list. And quite frankly, it's just like a marketing thing. Mm-hmm. I have never paid to be on a preferred vendor list. We do not take kickbacks. We do not give kickbacks.
Yep.
But we are on so many vendor preferred lists.
Yep.
Because they genuinely enjoy working with our teams.
It's on the merit of your team and
absolutely
your team's work. Well, and it's one of the reasons why we're so excited to work with you guys. And we really think it brings, again, everything that we do is built around what sort of value we can bring to our clients. And we wouldn't have done this if we didn't think it was valuable.
Well, and vice versa, right? So we're, of course, super focused on the experience and the value that you bring to our couples. And also the value, but the customer service. I mean, you guys are amazing with clear and concise communication, not leaving people hanging.
Yep.
Really, like your systems and processes very much mirror our own. And everything that you guys provide, from the talent of the bands to the add-ons and the technology that you guys bring, I mean, it's amazing. So we're just as lucky and just as excited to be partnering with you. So
we're both very lucky.
The feeling is mutual.
We're both very lucky. Well, I can't let you get out of here, Jacqueline, without a little segment I like to call quick questions.
Oh, geez.
Do you want to play?
Oh, I'm going to get myself in trouble.
Okay. Now you can't think. You have to be very quick.
Okay.
For quick questions. You ready?
Okay.
Here we go. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Morning or night?
Night.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Beach wedding or mountain wedding?
Beach wedding.
Okay. Book or movie?
Both.
No, gotta pick.
Okay, movie.
Okay. Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix.
Okay, and finally, sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
You've been listening to my interview with my friend and now my partner here in industry, Jacqueline Mavrukas. I really appreciate you coming in. And for all of our EMG brides that are listening, do yourselves a favor. Get yourself that insurance policy of working with a competent planner. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it.
It's been a pleasure. And to all of our wedding planning co-couples, you will be most likely be working with EMG very, very soon.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
You can find us at elegantmusicgroup.com or on Instagram at elegantmusicgroup.